In a world that appears to be filled with negativity and distrust, it's easy to feel helpless and frustrated. Well, how about a change? How about a podcast that brings positivity to your day with stories about everyday people doing good things for people around them? You found it here. This is the Harmony Goal Podcast with Tom Durth, focused on making the world a more harmonious and caring place. We hope you enjoy it.
Welcome to another episode of the Harmony Goal Podcast. And keep in mind, for those of you who have been listening in to our previous podcast, you know that our whole focus here is to shine the spotlight on people and organizations that are doing unselfish work out there in the world, helping other people who are possibly less fortunate or have hit on hard times. And today we are quite excited to have with us Lori Lazar. And Lori is an amazing human being, what she's doing out there, that she started this program on her own. And Lori was a former recruiter, and she has an undergraduate in business and in technology. And eventually she received her master's degree in education. And she, even with all of that and working a job that was a good job, there was something missing. She knew that something was missing, didn't know exactly what it was until she had a major turnaround in her life. So Lori, that's enough to whet their appetite a little bit about who this wonderful human being is that I'm sitting with today. And if you could share with us, and first of all, thank you for being here. If you could share a little more information about what was that turning point for you where you went from this academic to working with people who really need your help?
Yeah, you know, Tom, I just happened to go to a movie one night that played one night at this local movie theater. And it was a movie about this prison program in Texas. And it was a documentary and it did not sugarcoat anything. They had done this program and they followed the guys when they got out, and some of them did well and some of them went back to prison. But that night sparked something in me, and I got online the next day and I found this opportunity to co-facilitate a victim impact class at our local prison at Boulder County Jail. And I have, you know, been teaching for a while. And so I went and found out about what that was all about, and I was lit up. I was like, this is amazing, because I felt like very qualified from all the personal work that I've done to actually lead that work. So I started to do that at Boulder County Jail. And just walking in there, something was different for me. And one of the inmates said, "You seem like you were at home here." That's a strange thing to say, but something was shifting in my life. Like, wow, there's something going on here. And then I had the opportunity to bring in a 2-day program called The Art of Being Human into the Boulder County Jail. And it was based on authentic relating, which is a modality of work that is a kind of a conglomeration of a lot of wisdom and traditions and psychology and mindfulness and nonviolent communication. And it's changed my life to be involved in this work. And I got to bring in a 2-day program of that exact work into the Boulder County Jail in January 2018. And it was those 2 days that changed the course of my life. On the first day, there was a guy who was tattooed head to toe, even on his eyelids. And I'd never seen eyelids tattooed. And he said, "You know, I've been in therapy since I was this high. I've done every single program I can get my hands on in and out of the system all these years. And this is the first day I feel like something's gotten into me and I have this whole new possibility for my life."
Wow. Wow.
And then the second day, there were guys in there that have been in for 10, 20 years. And they said to us, "There's nothing like this in the system. Please take this everywhere. This is what we need." And so that's when I got my marching order that had been sort of like waiting for my whole life. I feel like preparing for it for my whole life. And from there, I started calling prisons and saying, "Hey, we've got this 2-day program. Can we bring it in?" And at first we didn't really know, you know, this is working for the general public. This work is done all over the world. It's through our sister organization called Authentic Relating Training International. And you can find them at authenticrelating.org if you want to do this work yourself, because it's life-changing. Mm-hmm. But so we've now brought it to 8 prisons in Colorado, to almost 700 inmates. And it's been really, really incredibly, you know, inspiring, rewarding, transformational. And our recidivism rate is 5%. It's right at 5%, for the people that have done our program, which is almost 700 people, like I said, since 2018.
What is a typical recidivism? Did I pronounce that correctly?
Recidivism, right, is, you know, the rate of when people, come out of prison and then go back.
Right.
That rate is normally, has really rested right between 50 and 60% in Colorado and nationwide for a very long time.
Wow. And yours is at five.
Five.
Something's going right.
Something's going right.
What was it like? Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I just want to say how important that is for us as taxpayers. And, you know, because keeping someone in prison for 1 year costs about $50,000.
Wow.
One person in prison for a year for $50,000. So if our rate is 5% and the regular rate is 50%, that means that out of 1,000 people, you'll have, what are the exact numbers? I mean, it's saving an incredible amount of money to get the recidivism rate down to 5%. Not to mention what that actually means is that much less crimes happening in our communities, less addiction, wow, less, violence. So
all this through learning to communicate more effectively. What was it like for you when you first discovered what the inmates' real needs were? And, you know, what did you discover about that? Because, you know, having people just communicate with one another in a training program is one thing. For them to take it away and use it, obviously they're doing that. What was the magic there?
Well, you know, I think what it really comes to is that, you know, what we're doing is, it's not that this is rocket science or it hasn't been done before in the world. Mm-hmm. Some of it is like very basic communication skills, like advanced, active listening and mm-hmm. that kind of thing. I think that the couple of things that make our program maybe different than other programs that are in prison right now is one, we don't get up with, the whiteboard or whatever and start, I'm the teacher, you're the student, I'm going to teach you how this is, and I'm going to talk most mm-hmm. of the time and you're going to listen. We don't do that. We sit in a circle. If our team goes in, we usually bring about 4 to 6 people in with us, and we sit in the circle with them, amongst them. We're not afraid of them. We are relating as human beings to one-on-one, and we're co-creating the class together, and we're exploring what it is to be human together.
Wow.
And so, even though, we have this particular agenda and curriculum we're going through, every class is different because we really are co-creating and incorporating what people are bringing from their own experience. And the open discussions that we have are so important in prison. They don't get a chance to just actually have a safely held open discussion within a prison about really mm-hmm. important topics like racism and gangs and violence and how you handle when someone calls you something, the B word, mm-hmm. things like that. Mm-hmm. We have really open discussions about how to handle these things inside prison and outside prison, like what's actually possible to shift. And it's not easy discussions. But so I think, and that they're practicing in the class the entire time, pretty much. They're practicing with another person and not just with their best friend. We're asking them, look around the room and let's choose someone you wouldn't normally talk to. That's just not someone you would normally talk to. And mm-hmm. we have people pair up with each other. You know, there was a class I remember where we got back on the second morning of this class, and we were just kind of sharing, like, how did it go last night? And the first guy that I remember said, he says, whenever there's a 2-day class, he's like, I do everything I can do in here. Anytime there's a 2-day class, on the second day, half the people don't show up, and the people that show up are complaining. He said, this morning it's 5 degrees outside, and we had to stand outside that door waiting for the class to start. Normally, no one would even show up. I'm just blown away because everyone's here and no one was complaining. And that's because of the way that we do the work. It's not as much about the content. It's mm-hmm. about how. It's about mm-hmm. how are we showing up and how are we creating this together. People just get so fired up when they're treated with that much respect mm-hmm. And curiosity. And we're really working to model everything that we are bringing there in every moment of the course. And so then this other guy says, this other black man, and he says, you know, yesterday when you said, you know, find someone you wouldn't normally talk to and do this exercise, I picked that guy. And he points across the circle at this bald white guy and he says, I picked that guy. He's like, and then we did that exercise and I realized that we had a lot in common.
Wow.
Yeah. So he said, after dinner, I asked that guy if he wanted to sit and talk. And we talked for an hour and a half. Oh. And now that guy is my brother. And they literally got up and hugged in the middle of this circle in this prison. And that's, you know, that's what keeps me going. These little moments that can't be quantified, or, you know, like you can't ask that on a feedback form. It's just happening. It's happening inside of each one of us and shifting the way that we're interacting with the world.
You are doing such amazing work there. I mean, just the idea that you're giving these people a gift that probably no one in their life has ever, ever, ever taken the time to give them before. Okay. You're setting them up for success for when they do walk out that door, and you're setting up society to be safer, as all those things you mentioned before. The fact that those two men, that example makes all of your work worthwhile.
I mean, I want to do this with, like, you know, Congress. You know, I want to do it because it has people break down these walls that they think are impermeable, you know, and I see it between rival gangs. And, you know, there was one of our first classes we did, the volunteer coordinator, who was very skillful and she'd been there a long time, she kind of filled the class with the particular influencers that she wanted in the room the first time that we came. Mm-hmm. And we didn't know it, but there were three shot callers in the room. Shot callers are gang leaders inside of prisons. So like whoever the gang leader is inside of prison. And in prisons, it's generally done along racial lines, is really clearly how the gangs are delineated. Mm-hmm. And so there was a young guy in there, Tyler. And I remember this. So Tyler and I, because I wasn't leading, when I'm not leading or when someone's not leading, we're participating. So I was participating in that this exercise with Tyler. And Tyler's sitting there going, oh my gosh, Lori, you don't understand what's happening in here. You don't understand. It's like these two guys would never talk to each other. I can't believe this is happening. And then he wrote us a letter later and he said, you know, Realness Project, I want you to know that in that room that day, in that very dangerous prison, there were three shot callers in the room. And it was at a time when race relations were really boiling up. We were about to have a big brawl. And he's like, I'm one of the youngest guys and I could have been called out to be involved with that. And I could have lost my life doing that. And he said, but instead what happened was those three shot callers went out to the yard and they created a new context for the men in the yard. And we do this whole piece on the power of setting context. And they said, our new context is communication before violence.
Wow.
And for 400 men on this yard. And he just said how grateful he was. He's like, I'm a dad, I'm a brother, I'm a, you know, son. And I'm just so grateful for this program and it's changed my life. And he said, specifically said, please bring this to the youth, because if I would have done this in juvenile, you know, when I was a juvie, I probably never would have ended up in prison.
How many tears of joy have you spent out there? That I can't, that is just amazing. I mean, that is so heartwarming. I get goosebumps listening to your story. It is just amazing.
And, you know, it's like, it's not that I have so much sympathy or something for people who commit crimes. You know, mm-hmm. I'm just like anyone else. If I watch the news, which I try not to, but when I watch the news and I get the reports of like these terrible things that have happened, you know, and sometimes mm-hmm. they have video and all that. And I'm sitting there just like anyone else going, yeah, block that person up, you know, but the thing is that, and that we need that, right? We need to have a places right. to take people out of society, to have a serious time out when they are not aligned with societal values and mm-hmm. norms and doing things that are not right for our society. We have to take them away and take them away so that they can't be with their families. They don't have their freedom. They can't decide what they want for breakfast or what they're going to wear. That's their punishment.
Mm-hmm.
And then once we get them there, what we do with them that's on us. That's on us. Like, are we going to rehabilitate them so we have better people entering our society? Or are we just going to like say, no, we want to punish them. We want to just make them feel terrible. We want to take away all their dignity. We want them to feel terrible about themselves. And then we want to set them out again into our society. Because that's what's happening. And, you know, they really have just so little dignity while they're serving time in prison. And, and when we don't have, when there aren't programs like ours in there, creating a different, an alternative, then what we have is the prisons are actually run by the gangs. Like underneath it all, they're run by the gangs. And that's where they're going to get their, all their information from and all their training. And then they're going to come back out into society as better criminals.
Yeah, the gangs become their comfort zone.
Yep.
Absolutely. That is, that's amazing. So are, do you have programs for primarily the men's prisons or men and women and juveniles? I mean, what is your spread of audience?
Yeah. Okay. So in Colorado, we have two women's prisons and we have, I guess that means we have 17 male prisons in Colorado. And so we have served in both the women's prisons, and we are serving right now a lot in Denver Women's Prison. And we've done a lot in La Vista and Pueblo as well with the women. So we are doing a lot of work with women. And then we are also doing a lot of work with men. And so we've been in, I think, five or six prisons that are the men's prisons. So we definitely do both. And when we go in, we like to go in with both men and women going in to lead together, because we think it's really important to have that modeling. And so people inside have had very bad experiences with people of the opposite sex and never had a healthy interaction with someone of the opposite sex, or vice versa, you know, like, or it could be someone of their same sex that they've, you know, experienced a lot of danger with since they were young. And it's so important for them to have this experience of not only having that experience with us as leaders, but also seeing how we interact with each other in a healthy, you know, respectful way.
So most of your trainees are in face-to-face versus like Zoom or anything like that, or have you used the online environment also?
So before COVID, we were actually doing follow-up Zoom calls with the with two prisons that we were working with, Rifle and La Vista Women's Prison. And we would have a Zoom call every other week as follow-up for those graduates. Since COVID, I thought, wow, the prisons are going to get all hooked up and we'll be able to do this work more remotely with lots of other prisons. And we haven't found that to be true yet. And, you know, we'd much prefer to do it in person because it's, you know, it's more impactful for everyone that's done that way, but it's still, it can definitely work online. And we haven't yet figured that out though, since COVID, we're not doing anything yet on Zoom.
Wonderful. That's amazing. What kind of feedback have you gotten from some of the people, like what that effect has had on them, their families, their relationship, their families? What are some of the things you've heard back from some of the your students, if you will?
Yeah. Well, one thing that comes to mind just as we talked about the Zoom calls is I remember a guy on the Rifle call. He said, you know, I've been calling home for 5 years from prison. And every time I call home, my dad answers the phone and we talked for about 30 seconds or a minute. And then he says, here's your mother. And he hands the phone to my mom. It's like, that's been my relationship with my dad for the past 5 years and really my whole life. And he said, since this course, when I call home, my dad and I have built such a relationship since this course that I don't even get a chance to talk to my mom because we've talked the whole time.
Wow.
Yeah. It's like, this course gave me the skills to connect with my dad that I've always wanted to be able to do. And so that's just one thing, right? That's why it's good. This is good for anyone, right? I know everyone would love to have a better relationship with their dad, or most people would, right? So authenticrelating.co, you can do this work on the outside, but you know, for other people, we just had so many great responses. You know, we have a guy in our course right now down in Colorado State Penitentiary, and he's married, and he talks to his wife on the phone, and they have a little daughter. And he said it's completely changed how he interacts with his wife on the phone. Like before, they used to get in so many more arguments and their arguments would, you know, just like any, you know, and then sometimes go off the rails and then they wouldn't talk. And he said, now his whole approach to his relationship with her is so different that he's now able to like navigate when those things get a little bit crunchy, he's able to like get it back on the rails much quicker. And he said it's completely changed their whole dynamic in that way. And they're modeling that for their daughter, who's like, you know, on the phone with them as well. And she's not now witnessing so much conflict between her parents.
Wow.
Yeah. I had another gal. This is somehow reason these examples that are coming are all like, first of all, with people on the phone at home. But this is so much about the ripple. You know, we're creating a ripple of human connection in the world. Mm-hmm. And so the people that we're serving inside, all these men and women, they have like 87% of them have children, and some of them have lots of children and lots of grandchildren. And so their connection, they are connected to those people on the outside, and they will be coming out again. 98% of the people inside will be getting out and be our neighbors. And so they are role models. So when some people say, well, why are you working with these men that are criminals and they're adults and you can't really retrain their brains and it's too late for them. And I say, well, actually, I don't agree with a lot of what was that anyway, because neuroplasticity shows us that we really can retrain our brains.
Right.
And they are connected to their families and to the community. And so they're when they shift, it really makes a huge impact in the family. I had this gal at La Vista prison, and she said, when we started the course, she's like, yeah, my 7-year-old son is starting to talk back to me all the time on the phone and like say really mean things and tell me that I don't have any right to tell him what to do and things like that. And she's like, I'm in here and I don't know how do I have this relationship with my son, you know? Mm-hmm. And so from the course and the things that we practiced, she shifted the way she was showing up with her son on the phone. And she said, now they're just like excited to talk to each other. And they're like, you know, just connecting in ways that they weren't connecting for. She's completely like shifted that dynamic, the context of their relationship.
That's fabulous.
Yeah.
So they're learning new language patterns and new ideas and understanding the person they're talking to, getting out of their own shoes, all that sort of thing. That is amazing. Your program sounds phenomenal. I just love the idea of your setup, how you organize people in the rooms, how you get people to be face to face with one another and realize that it's not a threat to them. It's just another human being that lives, breathes, and acts in different ways than I do. Wow.
Right.
Wow.
And you know, we do a whole section on unboxing. We call it unboxing each other as human beings, that we put each other in boxes, and we even put ourselves in a box, right? And we say like, oh, I'm this kind of person. I'm an introvert and
right.
I don't,
right.
You know, we have all these labels that we put on ourselves, and who knows when we actually made that up, like at a very young age, possibly.
Right.
And then we just believe it, you know, for the rest of our lives. And so how can we unbox ourselves and consider different, you know, consider that we might have changed, or that, you know, there's something else present that could be paid attention to. And then also with each other. And, you know, we'll talk about like, oh, well, cops, like, how do you feel when you hear the word cop? And how do we put, you know, all cops in a box? They're this way. And,
right.
And we relate to them as the box label instead of actually as the human being.
Right.
As hopes and fears and dreams and struggles and everything, just like we do.
Right. That's fabulous. That is absolutely amazing. You know, I went to your website and I noticed that you do have some funding to do these programs, but there's a whole lot of stuff that is out of pocket. I mean, you're making me think about the school teachers we have today that have to go buy supplies for their students. And I know you're doing a lot of that. And I would like to invite our listeners to support this program so in any way we possibly can, because this is good for everyone. And no matter what your spiritual beliefs might be, you have to realize that human beings to human beings is what our whole program is about anyway. And we would like to see you volunteer to help out, to see that Lori is even more successful in the future. So Lori, how can people do that? What would they need to do if they wanted to show you support in a financial way or any other way they possibly can?
Thanks so much for asking that, Tom. So one of the best ways is to go to our website, which is realnessproject.org.
Realness,
which is R-E-A-L-N-E-S-S, realnessproject.org.
Okay.
And click on the Ripple tab. And the Ripple is, we're creating a movement of human connection in the world and a ripple of human connection. And so this is our monthly giving program. And for just like $30 a month, just $30, you could support three people. You could sponsor three people doing the Art of Being Human, our 2-day course in 1 year. Just $30 a month could really change the lives of three people and all of the people that they interact with and impact in the world. So that would be incredible. And of course, any multiple thereof, that would be wonderful. And then, you know, a one-time donation is always deeply, deeply appreciated. We have even the opportunity on our one-time donation where it says donate, that people can give from their designated funds directly on there if they have that access to that, to a donor advised fund. So it's right there and easy to do. And, you know, if you want to volunteer and find out what we're doing, I usually tell the people the first step is to go to authenticrelating.co and do the program, do the 2-day program over there and see if it like lights you up and it's your thing. Mm-hmm. And then let me know and then contact us through the website and let us know how you want to get involved or volunteer. I mean, we need, you know, things like folders and papers and, you know, we bring in a lot of materials and we haven't created our wish list yet on Amazon. I've been told that we should do that. We haven't done that yet. But any way you want to help, just let me know through the contact us tab as well on the website.
Fabulous. That's wonderful. What a wonderful thing, because people see this stuff. They hear about these programs on PBS or wherever else, but they sit there and wonder, well, what could I do? I'm glad somebody's doing something. Well, guess what? We can dig deep and help out to send these people back into society again and being productive people in their families, in their communities, and so on.
And making our community safer for all, because, you know, I've lived here a long time in Colorado and what I've seen recently is just, I don't like what I'm seeing, more crime, more violence, more homeless camps. And the thing is about prisons that I didn't understand before, Tom, is that they're sort of our supply chain into those communities, into the violence and addiction and crime communities. And we have the opportunity to work with them while they're inside. So they can come out and infiltrate our communities as relational leaders and not a drag and not a weight on our society. And so that's the opportunity here.
Very good. Awesome. I love what you're doing. You know, you and the people you're working with, your other trainers and the other people that are helping put this all together, you truly, something I mentioned earlier, you might be the first people that a lot of these folks are experiencing who really show a sign that you care, you want to help, you want to be there for them, and then you follow through with something they could really use. Mm-hmm. What a beautiful gift you have for the society.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here. And ladies and gentlemen listening, please do help here, because this is one of those causes where it kind of gets swept under the rug. We do hear about all these other wonderful places where people are doing unselfish work for the society, but here's one that is having a major ripple effect and can be a very positive movement for our future. Thank you so much. You are a delight. Thank you.
Thank you.
And your whole team. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So for the rest, please tune in again next week for another episode of The Harmony Goal. And if you'd like to go to our website, which is theharmonygoal.com, and there's a place where you can leave comments for us, let us know how we're doing. If you'd like to leave a little donation for us to keep us on the air, that's a nice thing too, but definitely for the realnessproject.org. We definitely want you to go there, get involved in help change someone's life, which has a ripple effect into many, many other lives. So thank you once again, Lori. We appreciate you being here, and best of luck to everything you're doing there.
Thank you so much for listening to the Harmony Goal podcast. To learn more ways in which people are creating harmony in the world, simply subscribe to this podcast. See our mission at theharmonygoal.com. And remember, we are all empowered to create more harmony in the world, one smile at a time.